This is Digital Story Podcast number 742, June 9th, 2020. Today's theme is Data Visualization for How You Shoot. I'm Derek Story. We record XF data with every picture we take. But how often do we use it? If we examine our camera settings over a period of time with a specific model, we can learn a lot about how we capture images. This information can help us change the look of our pictures, plus assist us with buying decisions for new gear. And the best part is, this exercise is both easy and cheap. Learn how on today's TVS Photography Podcast. So this is super interesting. I know the title isn't that sexy. I think whenever you have data in the title, unless you're a Star Trek fan, it's not that interesting, okay? But this is truly interesting. And here's the project that I've been working on that I want to share with you today. So I've been shooting with a Fujifilm X100V since March. And the reason for that, it's not the only camera I've shot with, but when I've gone outside, it's the camera I've been shooting with because I've been doing street photography whenever I wander outside. Now, inside, I'm shooting with the Nikon, the Olympus, you know, all that kind of stuff that you have been hearing and seeing. But when I step out the door and get into an urban environment, pretty much since March, it's been the Fujifilm X100V, and I'm getting to know this camera. This is my first X100. I like it a lot, but I'm still learning about it and me together. So the way that I do street photography, at least the way I've done it since March, is that when I get out there, I really want to be thinking about the composition, about how I hold the camera, about what's in the viewfinder, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I'm not as concerned with the actual settings as I am with other types of photography. For example, with portrait photography, I'm really thinking about aperture a lot. I'm really thinking about color a lot. With product photography, I'm thinking about depth of field, and I'm thinking about exposure. You know, so different types of photography have me focus on different things in terms of what are the priorities. So when I go out the door with the Fujifilm X100, I'm really thinking composition. I mean, that is my prime thing. And so as a result, what I've been doing is setting the camera basically on program mode. So it's on auto exposure and aperture, and I've even gone so far as to using auto ISO with it. Now, in the beginning, I didn't really know how that would work out, and I soon found that this camera is really smart and it does a great job. And the way that I've been making any sort of adjustments, and I'm giving away a little something here from the data, because I didn't really realize this until I started studying the data, the way that I'm adjusting the exposure is with exposure compensation. And I know that for a fact now because I have data to back it up. So basically what I have been doing is putting it in program mode, figuring out what film simulation I want that fits the mood of what I'm capturing, and then I'm just letting it fly, And I have to tell you, I have been really pleased with the results. This has been a lot of fun. I've done street photography in Los Angeles for our March street photography workshop. I went to San Francisco, as you know, right before they started to open up again, and did some black and white street photography there. I've done some photography in Santa Rosa here where I go out on my bike, and that way I can these days get through the police barriers and all that kind of stuff more easily than I could with a car. So, I mean, I've had some really interesting spots, and each time that I go out to shoot, I'm thinking about, okay, you know, what film simulation do I want, and, you know, what am I after here? But the primary thing is that I need to be able to react quickly, and I don't want to miss any shots. I really don't want to miss any shots, and to be honest with you, I have missed very few. So rolling that all up, that's a big setup for this data visualization thing, because when I heard about this app Phototistica, all one word, Phototistica, Phototistica. It's a $2.99 app that you can get in the Mac App Store. It runs on the Mac platform. When I heard about this, I go, you know what? I would love to analyze my work with the X100V since I've been shooting street photography with it in March and really kind of see what's going on. And this app is perfect. What this app allows me to do is I can point it at a folder full of images. I can point it at a Capture One catalog. I can point it at a photos library. And I can just say, you know, analyze it. It'll analyze the XF data in the shots. And then it gives me all these different ways to look at that information. For example, I could have a bar graph of all the aperture settings that I've done with that collection of image. I could have a pie graph with all the exposure settings. I could have a bar graph of all the ISO settings. You know, it goes on and on and on. And you can just change among these so easily. You can just go, okay, now I want to look at ISO. Now I want to look at what day. Now I want to look at, and then it just, boom, it just shows it to you, and it shows it to you fast. It's really cool. So then you can save it as a file unto itself. It's actually a photostats file, .photostats file. And you can come back and revisit it whenever you want. And when you come back and revisit it, you still can do, you know, mix and match. You still can look at, you know, bar graph for one thing and then pie graph for something else. Filter it one way, filter another way. It's totally just like it was when you first did it. Or if you wanted to, you could export it out as a CSV format and then incorporate that data into something else. So once I did this, and I'm going to tell you the workflow and how I did it here in a second. But once I did this and was able to really start looking at how I was shooting, when I was shooting, all this stuff that was going on, since I got this camera, it helps me understand a lot more about intuitively, you know, what I think about shooting with this particular device. And then it allows me to think about where do I want to go from here. And that is fun. I tell you, that is really fun. First of all, to see, it's like someone being able to photograph your golf swing in slow motion and you're seeing it for the first time. You go, wow, I do that, right? I do that. Or you could be going, wow, I do that. I don't know. I'm probably the former instead of the latter. But at any rate, you get the idea. It's really the first time that I've been able to think about in a data visualization sort of way how I work with a particular camera. Now, I look at XF data all the time, but it's for an individual shot. And there's something very different about looking at an individual shot as opposed to having it collected for you for 1,000 shots and then seeing what you're doing there. And that, when you have this big collection of shots over a period of time, I find it very illuminating, okay? So let me tell you a little bit about my workflow, and then I'll tell you, I'm going to give you 5 things that I learned from examining this data, all right? But let's start with the workflow. So I decided to point it to a Capture One catalog. Now, I shoot with different cameras. You guys know this. I mean, I just love my Olympus Micro Four Thirds. I shoot with them. I use my Nikon. And I'm going to talk more about the Nikons in the next segment. I use the Fujifilm. I got 2 Fujifilm cameras. So, I mean, I have these different cameras that I use. And really what I wanted to do was isolate my shooting, my street photography with the X100V. So what I did was in my Capture One catalog, I filtered for all the shots that was captured with the X100V. I put them in a group. And then I exported that group as a catalog file. You can do that really easily in Capture One. So once I had it as its own library or catalog, then I could point Phototistica to it and have it analyze those shots. So I exported all this out into a catalog file, standalone catalog file. And then I opened up Phototistica and I started with a clean page. And I pointed it to this catalog file that had all X100V shots, street photography shots, you know, since March. And I let it analyze it. Now, I didn't want to do it with photos. I can do it with photos from macOS, but I primarily shoot with my iPhone for the stuff that goes in photos. And so, in all honesty, I don't really care what the settings are for that. But I was dying to know what my settings were for the Fujifilm. So anyway, so then I had this beautiful collection of data. I had this beautiful photostats file. By the way, all of this happens really fast. It's really kind of neat. You just boom, boom, boom. I mean, you are like cooking with gas in just a few minutes. All right. I think the longest part of this whole workflow was exporting out into a new catalog file, you know, and the rest of it went fast. All right. So what did I learn from doing this by pointing Photostatistica to this group of urban photography shots captured with the Fujifilm X100V? Well, I learned some interesting things, okay? And the first one was that my most common aperture setting was f5.6. My most common aperture setting was f5.6. And I attribute that primarily to me shooting in auto exposure mode, and that the camera was choosing that. I think what a lot of cameras do, and I'm guessing that the Fujifilm does it, is that when there's ample light, it likes to stop down a stop or two in order, you know, based on what the, you know, the lens strengths are and all that kind of stuff. In decent light, it really likes f5.6. And it was there quite a bit of a time. In fact, in another visualization you can do is look at aperture bands, you know, so, or groupings. So my grouping that was between f4 and f8 was 45% of the time with my street photography. So 45% of the shots were between f4 and f8, with the dominant aperture being f5.6. Now, my second most popular band or grouping was f2 to f4, and that was 41% of the time. So 41% of the time I was at f2 or f4 or in between, because it's programmed so it can do like f3.3, stuff like that. And then 45% of the time I was between f4 and f8, primarily at f5.6. I rarely shot over f8. So I thought right away that was interesting. Now I'm going to talk more about, you know, laying this data over the shots in a few minutes. Second thing I learned, 65% of the time I shot at ISO 200. So low ISO setting, which I like. Given a chance, you know, I like shooting at the lower ISOs, especially on any sensor that's not a full-frame sensor. And about 20% of the time, I was at ISO 160. All right, so 65% at 200, 20% at 160. That doesn't leave a whole lot for the other ISOs. Rarely did I hit ISO 400 or above. Now, again, part of this is the shooting conditions that I was in. Basically, in decent light, you know, out and about, shooting outside on the street, keeping my ISOs, you know, fairly low. Okay, cool. Here's the next thing. And this one I thought was really interesting. Nearly half the time I was using exposure compensation. So for half the shots I was using exposure compensation. So even though I was in program mode 85% of the time, which I also got from the data, I was using exposure compensation frequently to tailor the shot to my taste. So that's, and I wasn't, in all honesty, I wasn't really overtly thinking about any of this, other than I knew that I wanted to be able to react quickly and I didn't want to miss shots. So that led to program mode. And then I was using exposure compensation to adjust for the lighting. And more often than not, I was overexposing. So most of that was overexposing a bit. Where I was, you know, I was looking at the scene, I thought in the viewfinder it was being rendered a little darker than I wanted. And given a choice, especially when I have RAW files in the mix, which I do with that camera, I will expose just a little bit to the right. I'm not one of those guys that think you have to expose big time to the right. I don't necessarily subscribe to that thinking, but, you know, if it's on the bubble at all, then I'm going to push it just a little bit to the right so that I have a little bit more to work with that raw file. Now, remember, with the X100V, I'm also shooting JPEGs, and those JPEGs are film simulation JPEGs. I'm trying to get it as right in the camera as I can. So I'm not shooting to the right just to have it overexposed so that, you know, I have this extra data in post. I'm trying to get it so that it looks good, you know, when I expose it. Now, one thing I will mention to you, and I think I've talked about this in earlier podcasts, one thing about Capture One Pro, the latest version of it, 20 point or whatever it is that you can apply all of the Fujifilm simulations to RAW files in post-production in Capture One Pro. So you could just shoot in RAW, just pick any film simulation mode. You could just pick the standard Provia, let's say, which is a good all-purpose film simulation. And then if you wanted something different in post, you could apply it in post with no loss at all to the RAW file. That is something that's really nice, and I've tested it extensively, and it works fantastic. But I like, when I look at the viewfinder, when I look at the back of the viewfinder, either during break or, you know, whenever I'm going to review my shots while I'm still in the field, I like to see the film simulation, you know, the color rendering that I think I want for that shoot. And if it's not exactly what I want, then I want to change it in the field. Again, I want to get it as close to what I like while I'm out there. So the data really helped me kind of understand what my thinking was with exposure in the field using this camera. Exposure compensation was it. Now my exposure times, this is the fourth thing. Now my exposure times, they were all over the map. I mean, they were all over the map. And again, that makes sense when you're shooting in program mode that your exposure times are all over the map. But it also told me a little bit about that camera. I mean, I'm in program mode. It could have the apertures all over the map too, but it doesn't. It tends to be more conservative about changing the aperture. It tends to be either at f2, f3.3, f4, f5.6, you know, when you're at the lower ISOs. It tends to just kind of stick with those apertures and not flipping among them a whole lot. Where it does do all the changes is with the exposure times. So my number one exposure setting, according to the data, was 1/15th of a second. That was my number one, but that was only 12% of the time. So my number one was only 12% of the time. And then there's a long list after that. I mean, the balance of the spread was over dozens of settings. So, and for the way that I shoot, I think I have very good camera technique. So I can shoot at 1/15th with that camera, basically no problem. Remember, it doesn't have image stabilization. That's the one thing the X100V does not have stabilization. So, you know, if you're shooting at 1/15th, you have to have good technique or you're going to get a little bit of softness in your shot. Of course, I had the occasional exposure where I just go, I don't know what I did. I must have hiccuped or something when I took the shot, right? But I mean, generally speaking, the shots are really sharp with that camera, even though 12% of the time I'm shooting at 1/15th. But that really helps me sort of understand the way the camera thinks and that it's leaning towards being more conservative with changing aperture and just letting it fly with exposures. Now, my most common time of day, and this one did surprise me. My most common time of day was between 3 and 4 p.m. And I'm going, wow, okay. And all the subsequent bands, so, you know, it showed me in bands like 3 to 4, 4 to 5, 5 to 6, that kind of thing, were also in the afternoon. So clearly, when it comes to street photography, I'm not a morning person. It was almost all in the afternoon. I did have some morning times, but in comparison to the rest of the shoots, I'm an afternoon guy. And you know what? That's true. It's just funny. It's just funny to see, even though you know this about yourself, it's just funny to actually see that, wow, not too many morning shoots there, Derek. So, you know, this data gives me really a lot to think about. And what the next step for me is going to be is I'm going to go back now and look at these shoots. I'm going to look at the pictures with these numbers bouncing around in my head and then think about, okay, what do I like about, you know, how these turned out? And then what do I want to change? And I know in what I want to change, one thing, I got a shot on Saturday in downtown Santa Rosa that I really like. I didn't shoot that long, but I came away with three shots that I really like a lot. And the one shot in particular, my favorite shot, the only thing that I wish is that it had a little softer depth of field. You know, just a little bit. I mean, the subject is really nice and sharp. It looks good. But the background doesn't quite fall off as much as I like it to, because my vision for that particular shot is to really just focus on the subject, and then the background is really just contextual but not too much detail. I don't want any distracting elements. So I remember when I looked at that shot, I thought, wow, you know, I wish I would have had a little wider aperture for that. And so that's the one thing that it has me kind of thinking about after I look at this data and I look at the shots. I'm going to go back and look at them, is that maybe some of the time I'll take it off program and go into aperture priority. And when I do go to aperture priority, just shoot wide open. So it will either be program mode for when I'm really trying to work quickly, or if I see something and I have a few moments to work it, then take it off program, go to aperture priority, open it up, and shoot a few frames that way. So that's, you know, one of my first takeaways. And I'm sure I'm going to come up with more as I go back and look at those shots with this data in my mind. So anyway, the app, again, is called PhotoStatistica. Unfortunately, I think it's only for the Mac. I'm sure, though, that there are data visualization for XF data on Windows platform. It seems like this is something that, you know, Windows would kill at as well. And it's $2.99 in the Mac App Store. I have a link to it in the show notes. You know I do. And I just think it's a terrific exercise. And I really recommend it if you narrow it down. I mean, it's interesting to see all of your shooting, right? But if you really narrow it down to, let's say, 1,000 landscape shots or 1,000 portraits or, you know, something like that, I think it becomes even more useful then. I hope you find this interesting and give it a try. Tethered product photography with Capture One Pro for better efficiency. So I wrote about this over the weekend, and one of the things that I've been trying to do during shelter in place is improve my workflows, you know, as many as I can, because I figure never am I going to have, you know, this opportunity again to fiddle with stuff instead of just having to produce so much, right? Because I have more time. I don't have photo shoots. I don't have clients calling me saying, hey, can you shoot this? Can you do that? Can you do that? You know, so I'm here and I'm just working on my projects. And so I can schedule in, hey, I want to improve my product photography for the camera shop, or hey, I want to, you know, improve my video conferencing or whatever it happens to be. So the next thing that came up on the list was I wanted to improve the workflow for my product photography because I felt like I was spending too much time on it. And the way that I was doing it before was that I was shooting the images. I was actually shooting them with my Olympus EM5 Mark II, a camera that I really like, with the Leica 25mm f1.4, a lens that I really like. Really a nice combination there. And, you know, part of product photography for me is the joy of shooting, because I don't enjoy product photography per se that much. So I want to have fun while I'm shooting it. The problem was, though, there were too many steps. I would shoot the shots, then they'd be on a card. I'd take the card out, and then I'd put it in the computer. I'd load it into Capture One Pro. I'd go through, pick the shots that I wanted, crop them, make any adjustments, export them out, and then upload them to the film camera shop for the catalog page. And I wanted to cut out that middle step where I was doing the post-production because I just felt like I was spending too much time there. So I thought, maybe tethered shooting will do that. And you know what? It did. So what I had to do, unfortunately, I couldn't use the Olympus with Capture One Pro for tethered because Olympus cameras aren't set up for that. But I could use my Nikon. So I used my Nikon D700, which is a camera that I've altered. I took out the original screen, focusing screen, and I put in an old school SLR type, you know, mat with a microprism column and a split field. I mean, really, it's a cool screen. I got it on eBay for like $20 or whatever. It's really neat. And then I put the Voigtlander 40mm f2 on there, and it has a CPU chip, so it just behaves like a regular Nikon lens. But it also has very nice close focusing. It'll go to 1:1-4, which is all I need for the film camera shot. And I tethered that to Capture One Pro. And now what happens is I take the picture with a Nikon. Boom, it shows up on the screen. I look at it. If it needs any adjustments, I just do them, you know, like a little bit of cropping or maybe a little bit of exposure. And then I can set up Capture One Pro when it's doing this to remember the settings that I just made, the adjustments I just made, and then apply them to subsequent shots. So I'm under controlled lighting, you know, and all that. So now then I'm just shooting the next shot, the next angle. I usually do about 8 to 10 shots for each catalog item. So I shoot the next shot, comes up on the screen, it's cropped automatically, the exposure is adjusted, white balance, whatever. Looks great. I just look at it, nice and sharp. You got a nice big view of it. Shoot the next shot, shoot the next shot. I do it as a session. Then I just put them as selects. I export them out and they go straight to the catalog, film camera shop. And I just go, wow, that was cool and that was fast. It's funny because I've never really been a tethered shooter before. I mean, I've talked about it in my trainings because it was something I had to cover as part of the software, but I've never had it be part of my workflow before, my daily life. And now that I finally done it after all these years, I just go, I should have done that earlier. I mean, I've been doing the film camera shop since 2015. Okay. But you know, again, you know, I had the time and I, you know, I did the workflow. So the reason why I bring this up, if you shoot Nikon or have Nikon, Canon, Sony, or Fujifilm, then chances are very good that you can do tethered shooting with Capture One Pro. You can also do it with Lightroom, but I tell you, it's more fun with Capture One Pro. It's a better application for it. Not only is it enjoyable and kind of cool, but it really does speed things up. I have an article about it on the Digital Story. I have the link to it in the show notes. If this interests you at all, I would take a look at it. Okay, I have just a little Virtual Camera Club news here to cover. Boy, it's been fun. I have to tell you. First of all, I just want to say that I'm really digging our Inner Circle members, and we have some new ones. Welcome aboard, new folks. But you know, doing this content for the Inner Circle and then interacting with Inner Circle members and all this, it's been another good thing, a really good thing for me that's come out of this weird period in time that we've been experiencing around the pandemic. And I just want to give our Inner Circle members a shout out, not for supporting the show, which I totally appreciate, but just for being fun to hang out with. It's really been terrific. So thanks, you guys. And two of the things that we've been talking a lot about lately. The first one is the video training that I have, the essential steps to impressive video conferencing. That's the most current one. That is a 1-hour training that's available free to our Patreon members. There's a post right there for Inner Circle members with the link and the password and all that stuff. So it's been fun talking about that, and it's really been enjoyable. And then, of course, we have Digitizing Family Memories in there as well, and that's also available to our Patreon members. And then I'm working on some new stuff. I just floated some ideas by them. I got some nice feedback, and I'm kind of thinking what I want to do next. So this whole part of it, this, you know, creating this content for the Inner Circle, I also have all of this. If the inner circle isn't your thing, I totally understand. So you can go to thenimblephotographer.com, and the courses are available there, right? And I think Digitizing Family Memories is on sale for $39 there, and Impressive Video Conferencing is on sale there, I think, for $14.95. So you can, you know, get either one of those right there and just be a standalone thing. But it's just cool having all these new Patreon members come in and, you know, getting to know them. A lot of them said, look, I wanted to do this for a long time. And, you know, this kind of just put me over the hump. And I just love that. I just love it. So that's been a lot of fun. I just want to give a shout out to them and just say that, you know, all of you in the inner circle, you're inspiring me to do these things. And I think we've got, you know, this good thing going. And I mean, I want to keep it going after the pandemic's over. I mean, these are things that come out of this that you go, you know what? I want this to be part of my new normal. We're just going to keep rolling with this best I can. And I'm working on some new ideas, so there'll be more stuff coming. Now, if you're interested in all this, you should know that we have a Patreon tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can just go over there, you can click on it, you can see what's happening. You might want to join this great group of artists. They are a fantastic bunch all the way around. And finally, I want to give a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. I had a nice surprise today. I was looking for something else in one of my drawers that has stationery in it. You know, notepads, little binders, you know, that kind of stuff. I was looking for something and I saw this, this brown envelope. And I go, oh, I wonder what's in there. So I pulled it out and I opened it up and it was full of fine art greeting cards that I had done probably about 5 years ago. And apparently I had stashed them this is a really cool stash to use for special occasions or whatever. And then I forgot about them and I pulled them out and I was looking at them and I was going, God, I love these. I just felt so good just looking at them. And then suddenly I go, I have these to share. I have these, I can use these right now. And I forgot about them. And, I don't even have to fire up the printer or anything. They're done. I did them. And I have to tell you that's what printing does to me. Printing gives me that good feeling when I see my shots on beautiful paper, you know, on either a lovely matte paper or cotton fiber paper, whatever it happens to be. And it looks pretty and it looks like something that maybe you would see in a fine art store or something. And I feel good about that. I would love it if you got to experience that yourself too. What I would do is I would go to the tile that's on all the pages of Digital Story, Red River Paper tile, click on it, nose around over there, think about getting some paper, think about firing up that inkjet printer, and think about, you know, creating some art that really makes you proud and really makes you feel good about it. I'm telling you, it's one of those things that, you know, you look at it and you go, hey, I think I'm an artist. That's a good feeling. Alrighty, and a big thanks to Red River Paper for sponsoring this podcast. And they also have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. Right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you found some stuff in the podcast that you find interesting and that you may try some of it. Please try some of it. I'm working on some great stuff for next week. Come back and join me. Until then, stay safe. Stay safe. Be productive. And I'll see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.